Blog Talk Radio.
Listen. Hello. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Welcome to Next Fan Up, everybody. This is the AFC South off-season preview, overview, everything that went on there. First up, this is Next Fan Up. Thanks for checking us out. Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. You can also find us on Stitcher. If you want to get a hold of us, Twitter, you can tweet us at NFU Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/NFU Podcast and email us any fan. It doesn't have to be just us fans. You can email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. Like I said, this is the AFC South podcast here, and I have Colts fan Dan Kester of the Indianapolis Colts with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. Happy to be here and looking forward to talking about the AFC South.
That's right. We will be covering the entire AFC South. Unfortunately for Titans and Texans fans, we don't have your reps with us today, but Dan and I are going to do our best to talk about your teams. We're not going to try to leave them out and just talk about ours, but you know, it could get heavy on the Jags and Colts here. I am your host, Ryan Mercier, the Jacksonville Jaguars super fan. And we're just going to jump right into the AFC South, take a look at what our teams did and what we think they're going to do, especially with the NFL draft just around the corner. Speaking of which, Thursday, tomorrow, we have the NFC North podcast coming up, and Saturday, part one of the Superfan Mock Draft podcast. You're going to want to tune into that. It's a huge project. We're going to have every superfan join in. It's going to be really cool, I think. Pretty unprecedented. We're going to have every fan talk about their pick that they made. If you don't know, we do a Superfan Mock Draft behind the scenes where we conduct the NFL draft, each fan picking for their teams. And we have the first three rounds done and going to four, but we're just going to be talking about the first round on Saturday. So please check that out. That means Dan and I have made our picks already, but we can't reveal them to you until you listen to that on Saturday. So
that's right. No spoilers, guys.
No spoilers. Spoiler alert. No Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones spoilers or NFL. All right. So I'm going to go in order of records for last year. So first up, I'm going to talk about the Tennessee Titans. We're going in backwards records, just so you know, Dan. So you have to wait. Draft day must be interesting for guys like you and Pod Vader and our Patriots super fan, just having to wait and wait, and you know, I couldn't wait to be bored on draft day.
We gotta wait all night long for the first round to go through and finally make it to our team selection. After all the guys you've heard about for the last month are already taken.
Yeah, true. You get to hear about all these amazing players and then get the, you know, fifth best wide receiver on the board or something. Tennessee last season, 2-14, just a really dreadful season. These will be brief, just talking about last season, because we want to talk about what we did in the offseason. But to put everything in perspective, Tennessee, 2-14. They beat the Chiefs in week one, and then all of a sudden it seemed like nobody knew how that even happened, because just a horrible, disastrous season. They had three quarterbacks playing, everyone getting time, and just I think we're even worse than even me, who, let's just say, I'm not a fan of the Titans. They were just worse than I thought they would be. And moving on to Jacksonville, we had three wins. The defense was supposed to be improved. It was, but not after the first couple weeks of the season. And we just got three wins. That's why we have the number three pick in the drafts. Houston, they went 9-7. They were one of four teams to go 9-7 in the AFC and missed the playoffs. Some spotty QB play there. And Dan, how about tell me about Indy's season last year?
There's a lot of up and downs, which you'll have with a young quarterback, no matter how good he is. We had some interesting games where we showed up on defense, were able to shut down some good offenses, but also had our moments where we just didn't have the whole team show up. We got glimpses of having a good team when we had a nice running back attack with Bradshaw, but once he went down, it seemed we relied on Mr. Andrew Luck a little bit more. Just quick overview of that. Once Reggie Wayne tore his triceps, it was a struggle to get by in the passing game too.
Your team didn't finish in the regular season like ours do. You did get to go to the postseason. Just touch on that real quick as well.
Oh yeah, sure. The first game was nice. The Colts, having had Peyton Manning on their roster for so long, had some insight into the blueprint to beating Peyton Manning. So they jammed the receivers up real well, forced Peyton to throw deep to the outside, and he struggled doing that. So they were able to knock off the Broncos in round one. But then round two is more of the same. They faced the New England Patriots, who identified the weakest link and ran at them the whole game for 200-plus yards. And they ended,
right.
ended poorly there.
That is something I will want to get into a little bit later on the podcast here. Real quick before we move into free agency, I just want to point out, and I'm not even sure if I'm saying I think Houston's worse than perceived, but just pretty interesting to me that they were a 9-17, but this is the list of their wins from last year. You got the Redskins, Raiders, Bills, who had E.J. Manuel at the time starting, though, Tennessee, Cleveland, Tennessee, Jacksonville, Baltimore, quality win, and Jacksonville. So out of all of that, it looks like just one quality win, and they do have some moves that they made. But I don't know. It's just kind of a more interesting season than I thought. Any take on that, Dan?
Yeah, if you look at their roster, I mean the basis of their roster, they don't have a quarterback. Their first pick from last year didn't play much at all last year. So in addition to having the one quality win, their roster seems to be taking a step back. Especially considering their first round pick from last year, he missed the whole season. It's not easy at that position to just hop back in. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get an offensive team built to kind of support the defensive team that they have. I don't know that they're going to be able to find that so quickly as they would have hoped with their offensive minded coach.
It's interesting. I guess you could tell I'm kind of on the same wavelength as you are. All right. Uh-huh. So Dan, you and I are going to have to work extra hard here. We're going to look at free agency first from the Tennessee Titans perspective. They added wide receiver Harry Douglas, safety Denoris Searcy, Brian Arakpo from the Redskins, tight end Anthony Fasano, cornerback Parrish Cox from, I believe, the Niners, who had 5 interceptions last year. And they signed a tackle today from the Carolina Panthers, Byron Bell. They re-signed Derek Morgan, and they lost a pair of tackles, Michael Orr, the blind side, and Michael Roos, he retired. So all those moves, did any of those catch your attention there, Dan?
On the name itself, I was drawn to Arakpo, but I did some digging on him, and it seemed like his name carries more weight than his play on the field did. But hearing that he was going to be in a division chasing around Andrew Luck gave me some chills at first, but I've come to relax a little bit since that signing. The other one is interesting, the Bell one that they brought in today. It seems like they just traded one tackle for another. It doesn't seem like it's much of an upgrade, if any at all. And given what they went through last year, given the big money to, I think it was Adam Levitre, it doesn't seem like they want to invest too much more free agency money into that offensive line, despite, like you said, losing a couple of tackles. So with a young quarterback and a running back that struggled to get going last year, you think they would want to bring in some more offensive talent, or offensive line talent, don't you think?
Yeah, it's true. They've got some right tackle named Stingley or something like that. But they do have Taylor Lewan, who they drafted last year, who just seems like a very mean person. And I guess I mean that in a nice way. So they've got a couple options on the offensive line, and it is good to have a few. I do want to go back to the defensive side of the ball, where you have Brian Arakpo, like you said, and Derek Morgan on the other side. And as a Titans fan, I suppose maybe you get excited about that and think that we have two guys on each end that can rush the passer, which is, you know, you can't really ask for anything more as any NFL team. But are they really that high of caliber? And Brian Arakpo, you know, a little older and, like you said, more name than production. Derek Morgan still kind of young, but certainly not a top flight pass rusher. And this is still a team that has a bunch of issues all over their roster. So the weird thing is, you know, maybe this is a strength for Tennessee, and it still doesn't even seem that strong.
Good point.
Let's move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who I can obviously touch on. I actually did a podcast last March and went over the free agency moves there on Next Fan Up. You can find those old episodes on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio. But I still will touch on a few things. The main signing, the biggest one, which was a huge need, was the tight end position. And we got Julius Thomas from the Denver Broncos. And I love the signing. The Jaguars had a ton of cap space. They went after DeMarco Murray and a bunch of other high-priced free agents, but they did get Julius Thomas, who's going to be huge for Blake Bortles. He didn't have a lot of help last year. He had a lot of young guys going around him, and Julius Thomas is really kind of coming into his own. He had a lot of success, obviously, with Peyton Manning as his quarterback, which a lot of guys do, and shouldn't expect his production to be the same as it was with Peyton Manning, but he's still a huge addition. Also, we did sign an offensive tackle, but actually, Julius Thomas. Any thoughts on that from you, Dan?
Yeah, the joke I had. I was on one podcast earlier back in March, but the joke I had on Julius Thomas was he thinks that because in last year he had a 3-touchdown game against the Colts that going into the AFC South will be the best performance bonuses that he can he can find based on the Colts twice a year. So
wow,
definitely a great addition for the Jaguars to throw in a tight end with the AFC South champs having the biggest struggle guarding defending against the tight end. So it's a great addition. Gives, like you said, a great security blanket for Bortles. Find him in the middle of the field. He's a nice big athletic target. So he'll definitely cause some problems for the AFC South, Colts in particular.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's music to my ears hearing that. I don't expect him to score 6 touchdowns against the Colts next year, but hey, anything can happen.
That's right.
In Jacksonville, we also got Jeremy Jarnell from the Cowboys, who
at least behind the scenes,
I think on the podcast that he's been on is – he wasn't too excited about Jeremy Parnell, and he was kind of fine with him leaving, which has me worried a little bit, but we needed to upgrade the right tackle spot sorely, so I think he's still going to be an upgrade. On the defensive side of the ball, I'm going to end with one guy who I think you'll probably know who I'm talking about, Dan, but first we got a cornerback from the Green Bay Packers, Devon House, a linebacker from the Niners named Dan Scuda, and a guy I'm pretty excited about named Jared Odrick from the Miami Dolphins. Our biggest need, in my opinion, even more than tight end, and the Jaguars are a team with a lot of needs, I realize, was free safety. And I was really hoping for Devin McCourty from the New England Patriots. I thought maybe Pod Vader would just hand him over, but he didn't. Instead, we got Sergio Brown from the Indianapolis Colts. So please tell me anything and everything about Sergio Brown and how great he is.
Well, we need to acknowledge him with two claps and a Ric Flair. So, woo! He's a nice energy guy. Special team star, but he won't go clubbing with Rob Gronkowski anytime soon. I don't know if you guys remember last year, but they played New England, and Sergio Brown got a little bit chippy with one of the bigger tight ends in the NFL, and Mr. Gronkowski didn't take too kindly to it. So after New England scores their touchdown, he throws them into the pylon, or past the pylons into the wall, and Sergio Brown didn't take kindly to it. But I think even Bill Belichick approved of that toss out the club.
Yeah, I would say so. That's kind of a thing that Belichick likes. So tell me about him on the field, though. You know, because when I watch even Jaguars-Colts games, you know, I'm a very big fan, but that's not one thing I'm looking at is their free safety. So just throughout this season, I mean, how does he fare on the field?
He was our free safety. He came in to relieve Laron Landry while he was busy roiding up and getting ballooned in the bicep area. But he came in, gave a lot of energy to that defense, really picked up the voids of the defense. And he didn't necessarily go out there and make all the plays himself, but the energy he brought to the team was contagious. He got a more consistent pass rush out of the guys, just being in the huddle, being in those guys' ear all the time. He's great for all of that. As far as ball skills or coverage skills, he didn't stand out. So I guess that means he didn't get destroyed on any routes necessarily, but he didn't really make any big plays as much as he did just be at the right spot at the right time and deter the offense from making big plays. So is he great? No, but is he good enough to get the job done? I think he is.
Well, okay. Well, the word you had me excited about for a while was energy. That's certainly something Gus Bradley can get his hands on and use and definitely enjoy, because he's the most fired up guy I feel like in history.
He'll love that thing. That's probably why they signed him right there, just to get that energy onto the field.
True, yeah. Doesn't even matter if you could play, just be as excited as Gus and he'll probably let you yeah. on. Yeah. Free safety. Tough position for the Jags last year. Actually, somebody I think maybe you have on a futures contract or something like that, is Winston Guy, who's a safety. He was cut, I believe, in week 4 for us because he was just not getting the job done at free safety. And then we had Josh Evans. Basically, they just real bad in coverage. And, you know, hopefully Sergio Brown is an upgrade, but it sounds like he's more energy than he is fundamentals. So we will...
Yeah, funny you brought up Winston Guy. I've read a few things that suggest that the Colts GM thinks that he's a starter in the league. So I'm a little worried about him getting cut from the Jaguars now. But sounds like this is a trade they should have had halfway through last year to get what they thought they needed.
I'll just say that I've been there, so that was the feeling as well about Winston Guy with the Jacksonville Jaguars. All right, let's move on to Houston. And if you're looking for names, they certainly got some and lost some as well. So that they're certainly interesting. And like I said, 9-7, really right on the cusp of the playoffs. They added QB, they added Brian Hoyer. So we got the old Patriots backups together. Raheem Moore, the safety. The big man, love this guy. Don't know what he's got left. He's probably got some left, but Vince Wilfork from the New England Patriots. My guy forever, Cecil Shorts III from Mount Union. They got him. Jags no longer have him on their roster. Wide receiver, also another veteran guy, Nate Washington. They re-signed Kareem Jackson, tackle Derek Newton, and a linebacker, Akeem Dent. Any of those additions catch your ears there, Dan?
The Vince Wilfork one definitely does. He was a guy I was hoping the Colts would bring in. I alluded to a little earlier, the Colts have some weaknesses up front, and bringing in Vince Wilfork would have been a guy I would have supported them bringing in just to clog up some of the running lanes, especially in the late playoff runs that we've struggled with. So it's even worse now that he didn't sign with the Colts, but he also signed within the AFC South to clog up that, you know, lack of a running lane that's already there to begin with. So it's kind of bummed to hear him going there. So that was the big one for me. And then Cecil Shorts was an interesting one. You might have some better insight onto that one than I do, but Cecil Shorts seems like one of those guys that, you know, was often not talked about in the offseason very much, but he seemed like, when he was healthy anyway, that he was a solid contributor in the passing game. Maybe I'm popping his name in there when it shouldn't be. So I'd be interested in hearing your take on that one.
You kind of had it spot on with Cecil, who just, you know, you got to love a guy who's named Cecil Shorts, and he was drafted late from a small school. So just, you know, an easy guy to root for, seems like a good guy. And he was certainly a productive guy when he was on the field, but he just had a few injuries and couldn't stay on. And 2014, if you'd have asked the Jaguars before the season, are you going to re-sign him? 90% would have been a yes. He just had to show that he was productive, and he was looking to have one of his best seasons that he's ever had. And not only was he injured, but even last year when he was on the field, he had some drops and just some misplays, and it just right through halfway through the season, it looked like a sure thing that he wasn't going to get re-signed anymore. So for the Texans, if he's on the field, he'll be a contributor, but that is just the biggest question is whether he'll be there.
Yeah, it seems like he'll fit nicely with what Bill O'Brien's trying to do anyway, and give him a slot guy.
Every now and then he catches a game-winning 80-yard touchdown pass. That's not usually what he does.
Yeah, right after us Colts fans got done celebrating the comeback win, and then you turn around and you see Blaine Gabbert get his only win in the AFC South.
You know, there you go. That's the crazy times for the Jaguars. What a great day that was. They had a game with the Vikings. Oh, this is going off the rails. But they had a game with the Vikings that was almost exactly the same, and they ended up losing, and it was so heartbreaking before they lost probably 10 more in a row, and it didn't matter. let's talk about the losses that they had. I'll leave one out here, but they lost their center of many years, Chris Myers, so we'll have to see what they do on the interior. They lost a free safety, Kendrick Lewis, QB Thad Lewis, but one of the more interesting ones is they traded their quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, to the Jets, 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 Jets. And, you know, losing Ryan Fitzpatrick, is that better for the Texans or the rest of the division? That's a real debate, I feel like.
It's funny saying that out loud, but then you take a step back and you look at it, and who do they have at quarterback? So you might have a point there.
Yeah. Ryan Fitzpatrick is certainly not a guy who's a top quarterback in the league, but once you start taking all those guys off the board, he's still a guy who can win games, even though he's got some crazy turnovers. The other guy that they lost was, who I don't even think there's an argument. If there is, any Texan fan can email or tweet us, but the best Texan in the history of the franchise, wide receiver Andre Johnson, is no longer on the team, and he's with the Indianapolis Colts. So let's get into your offseason there.
Wow, what a signing, huh? You decide you don't want to bring back your 34-year-old wide receiver, so you bring in the next guy, the 32-year-old wide receiver Andre Johnson, to be your security blanket for your Pro Bowl quarterback. So that was great to have him come in. It's interesting that T.Y. Hilton is going to be the veteran of the wide receiver group in Indianapolis, but I think Andre Johnson is definitely going to be the security blanket for Andy Luck. having watched him for the last 10 or so years, seems like he just makes plays that he shouldn't make. He makes them consistently with bad quarterbacks. So hopefully getting him paired with Andrew Luck will show us some magical things for Andre Johnson's career and for the Indianapolis Colts season. So that'll be quite the pairing. And then to help him in the backfield, they brought in Frank Gore. So they got a little mini Hurricanes thing going on.
Yeah.
So that'll be hopefully as good as it was for the U back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And Frank Gore, he's probably going to get, you know, 200, 250 touches this season, which isn't a huge workload, but for a 32-year-old running back, it's quite the workload. I've been seeing some interesting things that of the 31-year-old running backs to rush for 1,000 yards, there's two that had stood out. It was Curtis Martin and Emmitt Smith. And I don't recall, but I don't think either one of them hit 1,000 yards at the age of 32. So hopefully Frank Gore can break that with a nice 4, 4.5 yard per touch, per carry workload, and kind of give the Colts some stability. Hopefully they'll bring in another rookie to help relieve them, kind of like the Carlos Hyde deal in San Francisco. But, you know, I think the Colts need that veteran running back to finally get a running game going. That's been a huge issue for them. You know, they had Bradshaw do well, but he never stayed healthy. Vic Ballard did all right, but he hasn't been healthy. So if they can get their running game going, hopefully they'll be able to take it to the next level. So then they brought in a couple offensive guards too. Go ahead, Ryan.
I was just going to ask you, maybe you answered it there, but obviously they can look for another guy in the draft, but going into 2015, are you confident with Frank Gore as the starting running back? Was just my question.
I think the key word there is the starting running back. He has a history of staying healthy, so I think he can carry that workload. When he gets dinged up, it's not a major ding up. He plays through the little nicks and scratches. So I'm comfortable with him being the starter for sure. Do I want him to add somebody? I think they have to. That's good. Big position in the Colts offense is a running back that's able to not only run the ball, but then to pop out of the backfield for a nice little check down. I don't remember. Boom Heron, he stepped in late in the season. You know, he's nothing special, but he was able to fill that void, catch the ball, and get 4 or 5 yards there at the end of the season when Andrew Luck checks it down. He's not afraid to check it down. He's a smart quarterback. So he'll see the open guy, and he'll get it to him. So
yeah,
I think
they
definitely
okay.
need a second piece. Yeah. Yeah. It's that neckbeard is the only thing I'm worried about.
Well, yeah, the neckbeard is definitely a worry. We've got you got a couple other additions. Let's go to the defensive side, probably highlighted by Trent Cole and you know, Kendall Langford. You re-signed Darius Butler, but do you think Trent Cole is going to be a nice pass rusher? And what about Robert Mathis?
Yeah, they're definitely older. It's kind of like the bringing in the Frank Gores and the Andre Johnsons on the offensive side of the ball. They're finding those key defensive positions that they're trying to get some talent at. The Colts have struggled on their draft picks the last couple of pass rushers they took. So it's going to be important for them to get a consistent pass rush. Cole, I think he's going to be a great pass rusher. He's going to kind of help help as Robert Mathis comes back from his torn Achilles. I'm seeing some mixed things on him. I don't know if he's going to be ready for week one. He might not be ready for 4, 5, 6 weeks. They're talking about putting him on the PUP list from some of the things I'm reading. So kind of worried about him at the start of the season. So bringing in Cole will provide some initial relief and allow Jonathan Newsome, our fifth round pick from last year, to continue to grow and hopefully be groomed to be that pass rusher unless we can find another one in the draft. But Langford was a big piece. Last year in that championship game against New England, they singled out, I think it was Ricky Jean-Francois, and they just ran it right down his throat. So hopefully Langford will step in and plug that hole and make him find another place to run and get that running defense figured out.
There you go. Us French guys think we're tough, but maybe we're not. So I really want to touch on this from the Colts in the offseason, and maybe you can tell me if this is something they do often, but they have a fun list of guys that they got, because DeMarco Cox is a basketball player at Georgia Tech, and they're saying maybe he could play a tackle. I don't even know if these guys matter or how much you know about these guys.
Then you have this guy named Earl Kine,
who's from the Experimental Football League, which I've never heard of, and that name is so many jokes. And, of course, the prize, it seems, possibly, is Daron Carter, star of the CFL. Do the Colts do this often, where they just find, I don't know, hockey players and shot put throwers and just make them and put them on the team, or what?
Yeah, actually, it's funny that you ask, because they kind of do. They've searched the whole world for these players. Jarrell Freeman's a former CFL player that has come into the NFL, and he's their star middle linebacker right now. Maybe star's not the right word for it, but he does a pretty good job. And then the last couple of years, they've gone after some basketball players, some rugby players. I mean, they're going after it all, and what I think they're trying to do is just find these elite athletes and bring them in and try to groom them to play football. And they keep them on the squad as practice players, let them go through off season stuff, work on their fundamentals, and see what sticks.
That's
Freeman's the only one to stick thus far, but they're experimental for sure.
Right, you got to find your guys wherever you can find them. And the other thing I found interesting is some of the guys that aren't on the team anymore is a pretty interesting list as well, because you have the Reuter Laron Landry. You've got Xavier Nixon, who missed the team flight and didn't get to play in the AFC championship game. And Trent Richardson, whose story is well known throughout the league. And then a linebacker named Andrew Jackson, who actually, Jacksonville was named after that president. Just a little history lesson there. So I just found those guys pretty interesting. You also lost, as we said, Reggie Wayne. These guys aren't as funny, but they matter more. Reggie Wayne, Sean Phillips, Hakeem Nicks, although I don't know exactly how much they battered last year. Corey Redding, Sergio Brown, as we mentioned, and A.Q. Shipley, the center.
Yeah, Shipley's bounced around a lot in the league, but it seemed to me that the Colts offensive line worked best with him in the middle. And you know, I'm not the biggest offensive line guy in the world. I don't always know what I'm looking for, but it just seemed like when he was in, they were able to run the football a little bit more. But to circle back on the Trent Richardson, probably the most depressing thing in the world is to load up his old Sports Science on the old YouTube channel and watch that. And see how dynamic he was back in college. And it's like he got to the NFL, got his paycheck, and just didn't care anymore. It's kind of sad to see it. But
we all are sad for Trent Richardson and his weird career, getting traded for a first-round pick and being picked number 3 overall, which is where the Jags picked this year. And some fans, let me just say, are throwing out the idea of selecting Todd Gurley at number 3, and I don't like that at all. And before we switch over to the NFL draft, I just want to point out a couple other things that you touched on the Colts. For the Jaguars, some parallels here. Sendarik Marks, who was pretty much the best player on the Jaguars last year, leader in sacks and just a disruptor up front. He tore his ACL in week 17, which was just depressing. But he is supposedly on schedule to return for week 1 of the NFL season. So I'm hoping that works out. And just in case anybody out there is wondering for the AFC South, there is literally zero news on Justin Blackmon, the wide receiver who was suspended all last year and more before. There's literally nothing. Nobody knows if he's going to play. If he is reinstated, he'll probably play for the Jaguars. He hasn't even asked for reinstatement, as far as I know, but just they aren't counting on Justin Blackmon being there. Maybe he will.
I picked him up in my Dynasty League on off chance that he does come back. So I still have high hopes for him.
Nice.
For no other reason to see my Dynasty team win a championship.
That's, well, I am rooting for your Dynasty team, just not your regular team. So the NFL draft is coming up shortly. And like I said, please check out on Saturday, the Superfan Mock Draft podcast will reveal all of our picks. Let's start with the Titans because they're number two overall, and a huge, huge deal right there is that they're going to have a quarterback available. Most likely Tampa Bay takes Jameis Winston, although there's all those reports that maybe it's Mariota. I don't know if I'm buying that, but number two overall, Dan, do you have any read on what you think they might do or what they should do? Should they take Mariota?
The football fan in me is hoping that they make that big blockbuster trade that is probably not going to happen with Philip Rivers. The Colts fan in me doesn't want to see that, but if I'm the Tennessee Titans and all the holes on my roster, I think I have to take a chance and go after that potential franchise quarterback if I believe in it. And do I believe in it? I don't know. It's tough to make that call. He definitely has the arm skills. His leadership skills are called into question. I think that's a little unfair myself, but I think I pull the trigger on him and draft him number two if I'm drafting.
Right. And then if you choose to do that as the Tennessee Titans franchise, which I think this makes the draft very, very interesting, that means you leave the defensive lineman, Leonard Williams, who many are saying is the best player in the entire draft. You leave them for your division rival at number three for the Jaguars to take, which I would be ecstatic about. And then the thing with that is the Jaguars, one of their most pressing needs is actually a pass rusher. Even though they had a ton of sacks last year and played well, they still don't have the one guy that from the outside that the defense is worried about. I mentioned Sendarik Marks, but he's not an edge guy. So there's still talk that even with Leonard Williams there, the Jaguars might even take Dante Fowler Jr. from Florida. So you got the Titans who could let the best player in the draft slip to their rival. And then you have their rival who might even pass on them. I would take Leonard Williams, but touch on that situation. That's pretty crazy for this whole division.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is too, if you pass on the franchise quarterback, you leave your division rival to make that blockbuster trade and, you know, get 2, 3, 4 pieces out of that trade instead of just giving them the best defensive lineman in the draft. So it's going to be a crazy 2-3 pick back to back like that for sure. And, you know, I'm a little more worried as a Colts fan about what the Jaguars are building than what the Titans are building. So we touched on the Titans a little bit before about how their pass rushers, you know, they signed the bigger name guys this offseason. So, you know, they're not even thinking pass rusher at number two, I wouldn't think. So, I mean, what else do they draft at two if they don't take either Williams or Mariota, like you were saying? I don't know. But then you get the Jaguars in that nice dynamic position. You know, do they take pass rusher? Do they take Leonard Williams? That's a tough call for them.
It really is, and I think that was a really good point about the trade option that you could leave for your rival as well if there's still a quarterback there, who, again, Mike Mayock, you know, I still think it was recent, he's probably still there, made his number one quarterback, Marcus Mariota. So you could theoretically, even though I think it's Jameis Winston, leave the best quarterback for your rival, and even though they have Blake Bortles, they're not going to take him, which I've seen before. When the Jags had Byron Leftwich, I believe they passed up the opportunity to take, is it Ben Roethlisberger and or Aaron Rodgers? I'd have to look at those. But so, you know, I think this is going to be super interesting, especially with the draft trade option, to look back about 3 years later. Maybe it has to take some time, but just to see how that shaped the division, or if it shaped the division, if the Colts keep dominating it, or if the Jags do and keep building toward something special, which I almost wish we were doing this podcast longer, because I would have been very objective and told everybody how bad the Jaguars were and that I didn't really expect anything from them the last few years. But I am with you, and I think that the Jaguars might be building a scarier team, certainly than the Titans, and the Texans are kind of up in the air in that regard, because they belong in the middle and smack dab in the middle at picking at number 16.
The Texans, you know, they had a lot of that older talent that I think carried them through this year, and they're talking about Ryan Mallett being their quarterback some this year maybe, and you know, a 28-year-old, whatever he is, first year starting quarterback. If he fails, you just set your franchise back again too. So they're going to be an interesting team. The selling point for me on the Jaguars is it sounds like free agents are actually ready to leave their team and go to Jacksonville. I mean, we saw that with Julius Thomas, and I think that's a sign of things to come for Jacksonville. I don't see that with the other two franchises right now.
Right. Maybe if Houston figures out their quarterback position, like you're saying, if Ryan Mallett turns out to be awesome, and you know, that seems like that's the guy that they're going to go with, you know, that could change, because the Texans have had history of being a good team. But that's something as a Jaguars fan that you notice in all the reports from all the writers and everything, is that all the players are talking about the culture there that they're building. And that's why they decide, that's one deciding factor for why they signed with Jacksonville, which is really nice to see. And Shad Khan, the owner, has already put his stamp in on the stadium with the swimming pools and video boards. And he has another project possibly in the works that'll be next, I think, to the stadium. And we'll see about that. But I agree.
I think it'd be fun to pull up some pictures of that swimming pool. I saw some good outfits that were being worn in those swimming pools during those games.
Yeah, they had the lady, I think, in the jeans or something. You know, they were making fun of her.
That's the one.
Yeah, there you go. And of course, whether they were staged or not, I don't know. But you know, they have all the hot girls in bikinis there in the pool. And I would just like everyone to know, I'm sure they're wondering, probably not, but I have been in that pool, and it's truly so different. It's crazy to be able to watch a football game. It's a great view, or a good enough view, from a swimming pool. It's odd. It's great.
How's the water temperature on those?
Water temperature is just fine, my friend. You should convert, go to Duval County, become a Jags fan so you can swim. Opposing fans do get to go in the pools if they pay. So the Texans, again, they're choosing right in the middle of the draft, which you know, is they have needs at maybe, you know, I took these from a couple websites. Hopefully our Texans fan agrees, but got needs maybe at wide receiver, linebacker, cornerback, offensive line. One guy really pushing for the tight end position as I was reading. And of course, possibly a QB, although that would have to be later in the draft. You don't hear the Texans talking about trading up, certainly with a division rival. So they're picking right in the middle. And I will just say, to tease the podcast again, is you probably will not expect Houston's pick in the Superfan mock draft. So let's go to Indianapolis, all the way down at the bottom at number 29, having to wait all day. And the Colts have 9 picks in this draft, I found out. They're mainly in the later rounds, but please tell us what you're looking at number 29.
Yeah, I was focused on getting a decent player out of 29, but I found myself migrating back towards defensive side of the ball. Don't want to spoil it too much, but the defensive side of the ball is definitely the biggest issue that I wanted to address out of that.
Let me say real quick too. with you know, spoilers aside, go ahead and throw out any names, just any of the guys you're looking at, even the guy you took, you know, just tell us who you like.
So definitely like the middle linebacker, Eric Kendricks. He's a good linebacker, good middle linebacker, which pointed out earlier, tight ends seem to dominate the Indianapolis Colts. So getting a guy that can play in the box to defend the run, as well as drop into coverage, defend the tight end. He was a consideration that I would like the Colts to have. They have some needs at safety, so if Collins drops, he'd be a good guy to eye. Demarius Randall, I'm hearing he might sneak into the first round. He was a guy to eye. And then definitely pass rushers. Any pass rusher that falls to the end of the first round, I think regardless of whether or not you have them, I think you got to take them. So I think Eli Harold's a name that drops you into the first round. There's a guy from UCLA who, for the life of me, I cannot pronounce, nor am I going to try to pronounce. But if you have a good night of drinking, I think you can stumble it up.
Yes. Yeah, his family will be very proud.
Yeah, and any of those pass rushers for the Colts' sake that can double as a defensive end or a pass rusher, I think that's a double win for him. Get a pass rusher and the guy that can stop the run potentially. I think that would be a win for them.
It's amazing to me. You know, you go through the draft process every year and all the needs and who you could get, and you're picking at the end of the draft. The Titans and Jags are picking at the top, and one thing you hear for almost every team all the time is pass rusher, pass rusher, pass rusher, and just shows how valuable getting one of those guys is, because it almost seems like 32 teams need one, you know?
Definitely. And, you know, for years, the Colts had Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney, and all they would do is pin their ears back and go get the pass rusher. So if you can get a versatile pass rusher, the one that can defend the run and get deep into that backfield to make that quarterback uncomfortable, you'll get a real winner. Another one is Jared Allen, great pass rusher, but he goes for the quarterback so many times that he leaves those running lanes open. If you can find one of those versatile pass rushers that can set the edge and still get to the quarterback, I mean, at the end of round one, I think you got to go get that guy.
Right. And going back to Jacksonville as well, that's kind of the question with, do you take the really versatile defensive lineman who's not really a pass rusher, which would be Leonard Williams, or do you take Dante Fowler, who seems like possibly the best pass rusher in the draft? Some people are saying Vic Beasley and a couple other guys. And also, specifically in Jacksonville, like Seattle, they have the Leo position, which, you know, they highly covet and need. And they don't really have the guy for that, except Chris Clemens, who had a decent season, who they signed last year. And pass rusher is always at a premium. I want to switch to the later rounds just real quick to give an overview. I know the Jags, for me, I'm looking for a running back and hopefully round two or three, because that means we'll get one of the, you know, higher caliber running backs, and it's supposed to be a pretty deep draft for that. I would also like any linebacker. I just feel it's a weak position on the team. Maybe the starters are good enough, but it's been pretty weak for a little while. I still think a safety is something we could use. And I would say offensive line help, but the Jags also signed a guy I didn't mention, Steven Wisniewski, a center from the Raiders. So running back is a position I'm really looking at. I know after Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley probably first, there's a couple other guys in that group. I know I like Jay Ajayi from Boise State, maybe even more than most. He's just got the whole package to me. So I was wondering, even though you like Frank Gore as the starter, you said maybe they get another running back. After Todd Gurley and after Melvin Gordon, is there a running back you like? And also, what are some needs for the Colts after the first round?
The bigger needs are definitely running back. after the first round, I think it's safe to say that both Gurley and Gordon are going to be gone by the time the Colts pick at 29. So hopefully they'll get a good valued running back. I like the Jay Ajayi guy. He's got it all. He's got the running. He's got the catching. I think he's all right in pass blocking. Correct me if I'm wrong. But the more versatile of a running back they can get, the better. Round two, round three, round four, whatever falls to them would be great. I think South Carolina had a pretty versatile running back in Mike Davis, who is pretty good at pass blocking even. So that's rare for a fourth-round running back, third-round running back, wherever he'll go. So if they can get a value in a guy like that, that would be amazing. In addition to running back, I think cornerback, it probably isn't a pressing need this year, but when you're re-signing Darius Butler as your third corner, Greg Toler as your second corner, those guys are a little bit older. So if they can get a good value there, that would be a great addition on draft day. I think the cornerback class is pretty deep this year too. So that's great for Indianapolis. And then I think they need an inside linebacker that can actually go up and stop the run, hit somebody, stop the running game in the hole, and let Freeman be the playmaker that he is. Come make those tackles after everything gets all clogged up for him. So those are the bigger needs, and I think safety is probably up there as well. They're playing the stopgap game in free agency, signing these older safeties to start essentially. Mike Adams, I'm drawing a blank as to the other guy that they brought in, but safety, they're just playing the stopgap game until they get somebody.
Right, and it's supposed to be a pretty weak safety draft, and that worries me too, because even though with the energized Sergio Brown, I'm hoping the Jags get one, and looks like the Colts need one as well. I had your needs as safety, running back, cornerback, and inside linebacker, so it looks like that is what the Colts will be looking for in the NFL draft. This has been really great talking about the AFC South, and we're not done yet. We got a little bit more. I just wanted to touch on the NFL schedule was just released, and let me give you a couple notes about the Titans and Texans schedule. Then we'll go into my team, the Jaguars and the Colts. If you found anything interesting, let me know. We got the Titans open week one at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I wonder what they're thinking for that. And they also have four home games in a row from week three to week seven with a bye in between. So that's really nice. Impressive. Yeah. I was surprised to see that. The Texans, their bye week is in the middle, week nine. They got one Monday nighter against Cincy. The only kind of problems they might have, they got week four at Atlanta and a 3-day rest till they host the Indianapolis Colts in week five on Thursday night. So that's interesting. They also play at Buffalo in December when it could be snowy. The Jaguars.
Pat McAfee had a great comment about he gets to play Buffalo in September, and as a punter, all he thinks about is when he's playing in those outdoor games. So when he's standing on the sideline, it's not too cold, not too windy. He can enjoy himself a little bit more.
Well, there you go, Pat McAfee. You're going to get yours. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. Nice and toasty.
Let's take a look at the Jacksonville Jaguars and what the NFL has done to their favorite team. They open their first two at home, which is great. And that's actually the first time since 2007 that happened. I'll just say that's also the last time they made the playoffs. So, you know, you never know.
Spoiler alert.
Whoops. I ruined the season. listen to this. Week 3 through week 10, that's September 27th through November 15th, the Jags play one home game. One. The other game in there is the London game. And their bye week is week 8, but from week 3 to week 10, one home game. The nicest thing they get is four home games in 5 weeks from week 11 to week 15. I was not happy Did you see anything interesting from the Colts schedule?
I think their big draw is they get Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees in a span of 22 days. Wow. So Andrew Luck will have a nice set of premier games against some of the more elite quarterbacks of all time. So that'll be a good challenge for the defense. See what they're made of and give them a little test of some playoff football in the middle of the season. And they're projecting that Peyton Manning breaks the all-time passing yards record either against the Packers in week 8 or the Colts in week 9. I think those are the weeks. So it could be an interesting way for Peyton Manning to break the all-time passing yards against the team that he got the majority of them for.
Right, and I'm certain that's not on accident. The NFL loves to set up things like that, especially for the golden boy, Peyton Manning. To finish this out, I had a couple questions for all our super fans, but we only have one. So, Dan, if you had a main question for me, go ahead and use it. If you don't have any, that's fine. We touched on this a little bit. I'm only going to ask you one. And for the Indianapolis Colts, you know, especially looking at the other three teams in the division, the Texans, sometimes in the playoffs, I never even believed in them when they were a good team. I just want to throw that out there. The Jaguars and the Titans, who have not been in the playoffs recently. The Colts have different standards, obviously, than the other three teams. And here are the numbers, which I'm sure you know. But the last three times that they played the New England Patriots, we got in 2013 in the playoffs, 234 rushing yards, 5.1 yards per carry, 4 TDs. November in 2014, last year, the Jonas Gray game, 246 rushing yards, 5.6 yards per carry, 4 TDs, and the playoffs last year, 177 yards, 4.4 yards per carry, 3 TDs, and that's the team with Tom freaking Brady as the quarterback, and they just run all over. So I would like to ask you, how are the Indianapolis Colts going to help their run defense, and will they help their run defense for 2015?
Well, I think you brought up a nice point. As a Colts fan, I think you just proved how overrated Tom Brady is. Just kidding. But okay. That is a fun joke. I as a Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady rivalry, I love to take any shot at Tom Brady I can get. But I think the name Jonas Gray, the fact that you said that out loud as a 100-plus yard rusher against anybody – shows you that it's a great scheme that New England has. He attacks the weakest player on the defensive line, and as a Colts fan, that player is no longer with the Colts. So hopefully the Colts have addressed that through acquiring Langford and Cole. They just have to plug that hole up, and in addition to those two guys, hopefully they can bring in some younger guys in the draft and also develop the guys that they have. They've had some draft picks in recent years that just haven't panned out yet, and whether or not they will remains to be seen. But it's there's no doubt in my mind that that's all that they talk about in the off season is they have those New England games up on their whiteboard. They circle those yards, and in every weight training session, every defensive meeting, that's what they point to and circle out. Because that's the team that eliminates them from the playoffs. So you get past those numbers on the defensive side of the ball, you know, it's a different game. And it's scary to say out loud that you want to stop New England from running the ball and forcing Tom Brady to throw it. Who in their right mind says that?
Exactly. And that, you know, that's to me why they were the Super Bowl champion. Not just why, but just shows how many things they could do and how they do them so well. And you may have guessed him on the opposite of that Tom Brady, Peyton Manning spectrum. But I really hope that what you're saying is true. And that's kind of what I imagine is that what the Colts are focusing on. And they talk about it often. And you know you want to give your quarterback weapons. And you know you want the offense to run well. But Andrew Luck is obviously very – very good elite quarterback, and the offense is going to be okay as long as he's there. And it's the run defense that I just found very interesting for the Colts.
And, you know, it's funny that you say that because you were talking about how they have all these nice pieces on offense, maybe more indirectly than directly. But if they can start spending some of these top picks on getting good defensive players in the draft, specifically the offense or the defensive line, you know, then they stand a chance. And now that they have an offense in place, maybe they'll go that way and really focus on stopping the run. That's been Chuck Pagano's motto since he got there: is stop the run, and then we can play defense. So hopefully they'll show that in the draft this year.
Right, and it's pretty interesting, again, talking about New England, where you have wide receivers from later rounds in the draft and running backs especially. And going back to another guy, we were talking about Phillip Rivers. I know he had Vincent Jackson, but a lot of times he doesn't have anybody even close to elite as weapons, and he makes that offense go. I love Phillip Rivers, but I'm sure you have to say Andrew Luck is the better quarterback. So, again, if you just go after running backs and wide receivers later in the draft and spend some of those earlier round picks on the big guys, maybe that's the way that the Colts need to go.
I just got this thought as you said that. The consistency between, or the comparison, I guess, between Phillip Rivers and Tom Brady is that the versatile tight end piece that they have. I wonder if giving them that elite tight end that's also capable of run blocking is some sort of secret that keeps them going and gives them their security blanket while adding to the running game at the same time.
That can certainly help, and we, America, can only hope that that is the case for Blake Bortles and Julius Thomas and the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I guess the question for the AFC South towards the Jacksonville Jaguars is what piece of what Gus Bradley is bringing to Jacksonville are you buying the most? It seems like they're getting some momentum from free agency. So as a fan, what excites you the most about Gus Bradley?
Well, I think you just touched on it, and I don't want to get too far off topic, but I just had a thought that you said from Gus Bradley and basically the energy and free agents wanting to come here. I don't want to lose anybody, but very fast. I'm from Las Vegas, and the UNLV Running Rebel basketball team, I'll just say real quick, has a head coach in Dave Rice, who said to not be a very good coach, but he is an amazing recruiter, and he just gets these players to come here, and then they underachieve. So I just thought of a parallel for some reason for that. I'm not even saying Gus Bradley's underachieving yet. He hasn't had the players, but it is nice to see all these guys want to come play. But the only thing I'll say is you look at it and you have 4 wins and you have 3 wins. I'm buying all the energy. I'm buying the players wanting to come here. Now I just want to see some wins on the board. Double at least from last year. Show us some promise. If he can win, He's definitely got something great coming here, and if he doesn't, then maybe he's not fit to be a head coach. So what I'm buying is some of the obvious stuff, which is the energy and the culture. And the only thing I'm not buying so far is the amount of wins.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for the AFC South. We definitely got to talk a lot there about the Colts and Jaguars toward the end. Hopefully we covered your teams, Tennessee and Houston, rightly enough. Any fans out there who don't think so or want to get back at us, please contact us on Twitter or email. My Twitter handle, again, I'm Ryan Mercier, is at @RyanM_DrHands. And Dan, what's your Twitter handle?
It's Dynasty by Luck. That's Dynasty by Luck. Little tribute to my name, Dan, and Mr. Andrew Luck.
There we go. Shout out to you both. So please, again, check out the next couple of podcasts coming up. We got NFC North and the Superfan Mock Draft podcast. For Dan, Colts fan Dan and myself, the Jaguars superfan, thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.